Holy cow, you found a good one. It's the Loftus Party, and you guys, if you're just jumping in, this is a great one. We've got Nick Searcy coming up on the show later, and you're like, who the heck is Nick? He's in everything. I'm looking at his Wikipedia, Gimlet. The guy's been in like 5 movies that have been nominated for Best Picture. This is short stuff. This is The Prince of Tides, Fried Green Tomatoes. He was in the movie The Fugitive. He was in Castaway, Head of State, just tons. Now he's directing. He's an amazing guy. Very outspoken on Twitter. Very. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's his Twitter name?
I believe it's at Nick Searcy.
Nick, or is it like that Nick Searcy or something like that? I don't know.
I'll look real quick, but.
But it's a great segue, because and I can't wait to ask him about this, because he is so outspoken. He's completely outspoken. I don't know if he's got the blue check by his name or not, but they're dropping like flies.
Yes,
people are. Now here, oddly enough, and this is because we're just jumping right into the show. And we'll have Nick on later. I cannot wait to talk to that guy. They got the big InfoWars thing happened, like in a coordinated.
So dumb.
And of course I'll do the obligatory. Like, I never listened to InfoWars. Like, I have a buddy of mine who does, but whatever. Like, that's not my bag. I guess you're supposed to hate them. You're supposed to go, I find Alex Jones despicable. That's what everybody has to say. I hate that prerequisite, blah blah blah. But it's like everyone got together and just got rid of Alex Jones. Everybody except for Twitter. I'll give Twitter credit there. But it was like a coordinated attack. I don't even know.
Led by CNN, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, but I don't know what Alex Jones did. I don't know what specifically they're going, this was a violation of our terms. So, and then they just banned. So Twitter still has InfoWars and Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
But they banned Gavin McGinnis.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday, and I didn't get the 411 on it. I mean, Gavin for a long time was a pretty mainstream commentator. He worked for Levin. They had a falling out, I believe. Not really sure what happened, other than some association to an organization called the Proud Boys, which I really don't know or understand.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about either. But it just seems like they got kicked off because, like, we don't like what you think is how it looks to me. So,
well, I think the Proud Boys are in that entire group that's considered white nationalists, and I don't know enough about them to know whether that's an accurate characterization or not.
It can't be. Gavin McGinnis. I've seen him on Red Eye a bunch of times. Highly entertaining dude.
Mm-hmm.
Highly entertaining dude. I think he just seems like he'd be too smart to be associated with something like that. Like, there's a rally going on today. It's the anniversary of Charlottesville, and it's hilarious because there's just not enough white supremacists to go around.
No, there's not. It's 6 guys named Bubba, and you'll hear about it for the next 6 days.
Yeah. there's just not. So now they're turning on the cops. when the protesters are there and there's no like white nationalists, now they're yelling stuff at the cops, and it's all just so predictable and boring. I don't whatever. It's just so predictable and boring, and just absolutely boring. And the good thing is they're showing their true colors by turning on the cops.
Well, and to me, right, I heard something that finally made sense about what all of this that bothers me so much. Jordan Peterson says a lot of times when he's talking about the political left and the political right and what their actual roles in this process legitimately could be, he says the right puts a box around what's unacceptable, and I don't think you or I or most of the people we would know would say that white identity politics and nationalism is okay. We're not calling for a white ethno state. That would be ridiculous. So we put a box around that and say, okay, CNN's going to pay a lot of attention to it. So will MSNBC and all the other hate mongers. But most of the folks on the right just look at it and go, yeah, that's illegitimate. We don't sign up for that. Nobody puts an effective box around the people on the left who attack Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk while they're having breakfast. The guy who put several people in the hospital, whacking them over the head with bike locks at one protest, from Antifa, got 3 years probation. He didn't even do any jail time. There is no box on the left of what is unacceptable.
No, it's all just regretful, spontaneous violence that has nothing to do with politics.
None.
And oh well, you know, it's I can't stand it, and I find it, I really do. Like, it's not, maybe boring isn't the, it's just so predictable. It's like you've got the Antifa people looking for a fight, and then, oh, these guys show up and they're like, we're gonna stand up to you, blah blah blah. Like, I really, I just, like, don't go, man. Just don't go. Let these people scream in a vacuum. Like, if I was like, right now they're marching and they're saying things that all cops are racist and blah 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 blah. If I was the cop in that town, I'd be like, everybody goes home. We're all going home. They're on their own. They don't like cops. We're out of here. Like, just,
Right?
it's just
Pack it in,
adding fuel to the.
boys.
I want to go on to this story because this is one that we've been on top of and our listeners have been on top of, and now finally, again, the mainstream media is starting to catch up. Right, they're starting to pay some attention to Bruce Orr.
Oh, finally.
Oh yeah, well they've got emails from him and text messages from him, and it sounds just like another version. It's the same thing as Peter Strzok, you know? It's like, oh, who are we going to contact if you go away? Who's going to be this? Can you help us out with that? How you do? Just like all contingency plans and don't worry and Trump won't be president and all this stuff. Now, let's not forget Bruce Orr's wife, who worked for Fusion GPS, which is like, that just stinks. Just stinks to high heaven. Then you throw in, and this is just comedically. This is like Dick Tracy. This is like a bad detective novel. Spontaneously, in the 2016, one day out of nowhere, she decides to get a ham radio license,
Yeah, I know.
and
I
I,
was just
that's just insane to me.
talk about a back channel, folks.
Right? So now it's too funny. I'm watching the Sunday shows, and you've got oh, who's the one of the Democrats who's always on the five on Fox News.
Juan Williams?
Juan Williams, yeah. He's like, you know what? Here's what, you can't talk about the whole FBI. You can't talk about the entire Justice Department. You got a couple people. You got a handful of people. I know it looks bad, but and it's like, it looks horrible. Like,
Well, what I was reading is Bruce Orr actually kept notes of his meetings with Christopher Steele and the people at Fusion GPS after Steele had been let go by the FBI for running his mouth. So he
Yeah.
wasn't even a legit source anymore. And Orr, I think, I can't remember if he actually met with Steele, but he was meeting with Glenn Simpson. And the notes he was taking about what a piece of garbage that dossier was were incredible. How do they then use that to get a FISA warrant? That's my big question.
That's a huge, huge part of it. And then you see this whole it's Peter Strzok, it's Lisa Page, it's Bruce Orr, it's his wife, it's Jim Comey. It's like, it is a systematic, it is the biggest story, I think, that no one's talking about. And this goes back to the YouTube and Twitter thing. What they do is they say it's a, oh, you're talking about a conspiracy theory now. It's a conspiracy theory. Every theory is a conspiracy theory until it's proven. And I guess
Well,
that's what YouTube is saying. They kicked Alex Jones off for, because he propagates conspiracy theories and stuff like that. But like, every theory is a conspiracy theory unless everybody believes it. That's science, man. Someone starts a new theory and you're like, whoa, that's crazy, and then it turns out it's true. And so it's a systematic. I'm sorry, I just don't believe you can divorce yourself. Peter Strzok, it's obvious he hated Trump, and Lisa Page hated Trump, and they're a position of power, and you cannot convince me that they didn't do something, start some crap to try to take down his presidency. And then you add on the Bruce Orr, and then you add on his wife, Nelly, worked for Fusion GPS and was getting ham radio. Are you kidding me? We're supposed to believe everything's on the up and up? Are you high? Are you high? And then they always go to this, it was a handful of bad apples, which leads me right to the whole IRS thing, mm-hmm. which leads me right there, and there's some new developments on that, because that's the other thing they would always say about the IRS. It was a couple rogue agents in the Cincinnati branch, a couple of rogue agents. Well, now we know John McCain's office was involved. We know the guy who was supposed to revamp the IRS didn't do it, and I don't know if you knew this, but get out your umbrella, because it's about to start raining knowledge on you. A judge just awarded a settlement to, there was a class action lawsuit from all the Tea Party groups that got slowed down, because McCain's right. office was like slow them all down. So there's a settlement's been reached, $3.5 million. The IRS is going to be doling out $3.5 million to these Tea Party groups, but they do not have to admit guilt.
That's pretty typical of a settlement.
So yeah, we're just going to give you $3.5 million, but we didn't do anything.
Yes, you did.
And that's and no one is reporting it. Like, no, the idea of the government being weaponized against its citizens, it should terrify everybody. And that people aren't reporting on this story because it'll happen again. It'll happen again. It'll happen again.
Well, there's lots of stories that aren't being reported. I mean, we talked last week about Dianne Feinstein and her Chinese spy, right? Now, yes! this week, a man in New Mexico was running a school shooting training camp. That man is the son of an unindicted 9/11 co-conspirator who testified for the Blind Sheikh, who is also Linda Sourisour's mentor. Gee, I wonder why it was canned and framed that way.
It's mind-boggling. And now you've got breaking news right now. Keith Ellison.
Yeah, I saw that. Dang.
I guess dragging his girlfriend or his ex-wife, dragging some lady around by her feet and throwing her off the bed and
and her kids are piping up about it from what I read.
Oh, I guess they found the video. They found the text messages. They found all this evidence.
They found the video.
Oh, the kids did. They found the text messages. They found emails. They found a video, and they went to the mom, and the mom was like, well, let's be cool about it. This isn't in our best interest. The mom tried to talk him out of it, and then finally, they talked her in. We got to come forward.
Right.
So she did. But, like, no one will be reporting that either. No. Everyone's talking about Omarosa's book.
Omarosa. Did you see the latest? She secretly recorded John Kelly firing her, and now she's released it.
Did you hear the tape?
No.
Oh, I did.
And?
I heard, he's like, listen, and I'm paraphrasing here, but this is the attitude. Listen, this didn't work out. But there's a way to do this where, everybody wins and there's no animosity. And then you have a very bright future. It's like not even threatening at all. He's just pretty much saying, be cool.
Be cool. Like
if you're cool with us, we'll be cool with you. Yada yada yada. And now she's man, I tell you what, it's
Can
I
we
was
just
always
think about
surprised.
one thing?
What?
Nobody would know who Omarosa was if it weren't for Donald J. Trump. No one would care.
I watched the first season of The Apprentice. I was one of those people, and I couldn't stand her. I could not stand her. 'Cause she was the villain. She was the villain of the show. Duplicitous, lies like a snake. And when she started, like, when she jumped on board the whole Trump train and started, I'm like, oh boy,
Oh boy,
this is
this is
not
going
going
to
to
be
end
trouble.
well. This is not going to end well. And then all of a sudden she's got a position. They made up a job for her in the White House. And I'm like, oh boy. And then she got fired. And I'm like, oh, maybe we dodged one. Maybe we dodged a bullet. Because there is one person that that chick looks out for. One person. And it's Omarosa. She is a straight up snake. A straight up snake. And I hope this is like her last trip to the ATM. This
Oh,
is
it's
her
gotta
last.
be. It's gotta be because after this, who in the world is going to entrust her with anything? Seriously, you literally pulled a Michael Cohen and you already saw what happened to him. Like, come
Oh.
on. What is all this subterfuge where we're gonna secretly record people doing nothing wrong so we can release it later? I mean, I don't even I can't even wrap my brain around how you think that way.
I totally want her prosecuted right now. I do. Because that's like a big national security risk.
Well, who knows what
You're
she
not allowed to
walked
have a
around
phone in the
recording?
Situation Room.
Seriously, who knows what she walked around with a recorder in her pocket? I mean, just what a
She is
sleazy, sleazy thing to do. You could have
and she's so insanely
walked out of
plastic.
there and had a career and just been, yep, didn't work out, but here's what I did. I mean, it's still on your resume. Instead of that, you do this to cash in and then it's over. Over, because no one will trust you.
I can't. I think she's married to some NFL player, but I feel sorry for
Oh,
that dude.
really?
Yeah, I really. Whoever is saddled with having to bed down with that lizard woman every night. Oh, sweet Lord! I want to get to this before we run out of time. The California wildfires,
Yeah, I know.
and what a. What a raging pile of bureaucracy that is. And that is the bureaucracy. That's what's, in a way, responsible for how big these fires are. There was a, and I saw it, I should have bookmarked it on Twitter. Someone posted it. It's like the state of California was warned about a year ago by the forestry department or whoever, saying, listen, we got way too much undergrowth. We got way too much undergrowth. It's gonna go up, and it's gonna go up big. So you can thanks Obama, thanks Obama.
Well, we
Seriously.
had to save a bird or something, didn't we? Isn't that what started the whole we can't disrupt the habitats? I mean, when
Well,
I
it's
talk to people who live out
in a
there.
way, Bill Clinton changed the forestry system, and they tried to make it work, and it didn't kind of work, and it was broken. And so one of the things Obama did in 2012 was completely overhauled it and started a whole new level of bureaucracy. So yeah, it's almost impossible if you're a homeowner to legally clear undergrowth. You might be upsetting the habitat of this animal or that animal or something. Controlled burns are unheard of. There's just too much red tape, and and that I find it odd. And this is like the delicious part of it. If there's any upside, hopefully we'll learn something about not letting this happen again. But like the forestry department, another bureaucratic arm, like warned the governor, and like everybody's. Blaming Trump, and Trump's trying to
Climate
say,
change. Climate change is the one I see.
yeah, climate change. And then Trump tweeted something about the water, which was a bit misguided because, yeah, all the runoff, it does. It goes to the ocean. It goes straight to the ocean. But it's not about water. It's about being able to clear your land and clear out
Well, and
old
then
growth.
the one in Southern California was arson. They arrested the guy.
Oh, that's. I think that was the one up north too. I thought they found somebody.
The previous ones they did, I haven't been able to find anything on this one. Down south, they've arrested somebody, though.
Good. Good, good, good. All right. This is a fun show. This is a great one. That's just like a Gatling gun. News, news, news. We got Nick Searcy. I want to make sure we got plenty of time for Nick. I hope this goes long. I have so much stuff that I want to talk to him about. So we're gonna talk to Nick Searcy for a little bit. Super excited about that. Then stick around because we've got some hilarious news out of England that's right out of Monty Python. We're gonna be talking a little bit about the Oscars and The Punisher and Deadpool 2, all kinds of stuff. So let's settle in with Nick Searcy, and we'll be right back. As promised, you guys, we got Nick Searcy with us. Now, before I even get to talking with the man, an amazing, go to this dude's Wikipedia, go to this dude's IMDb page. We're talking Days of Thunder, Prince of Tides, holy Castaway, which I just saw recently, which amazing performance in that. The Ugly Truth, The Last Song, Moneyball, The Shape of Water, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing. This dude is Nick Searcy. He's an actor. He's a director. He's a filmmaker. He's a provocateur on Twitter. Nick, thanks for being here, man.
I'm also a really bad golfer. You forgot that.
All right.
Hey.
A really bad golfer. Fantastic.
Nice to be with you, Michael.
Okay, now I got so much stuff. I don't even know where to ask, so we're gonna go with the big one here.
Just relax. Don't be nervous. I know how excited you must be to speak to me, but you know, it's normal. People feel like this all the time. Don't just relax.
I'm gonna try. I want to talk about, you've directed two films. You directed a piece in 95, which I'm guessing you did that on film, right? That was like an old school film camera, right?
Yes, we shot that on 35 millimeter film back before the digital age. Yeah.
Okay, so that's stress. That's a high level stress. Now, you've got a new film coming out, Gosnell. And I guess you're all finished up on that. You wrapped a couple years ago, but now you've locked in a distribution deal. What was your experience like on that one? That's a bit bigger, yeah?
Yeah, it was a little bigger budget for me, and you know, it was a great experience. Just, I love directing. I love the thrill of trying to make a movie that way. It's kind of like being in a war. You have
Yeah.
to, you know, I mean, not to denigrate soldiers, but I mean, it's you know, it's a battle every day to get the thing done. And you know, I'm very excited that it's finally coming out. There was a while there when I thought that it just might never surface because it's a very controversial subject, and I think the producers had some difficulty getting a company to release it.
Well, in case you don't know, Gosnell, a big abortion doctor, right, in Philly?
Yeah, well, basically he was a murderer. He just
Yeah.
You know, the fact that he happened to be an abortion doctor was just the way he went about things. I mean, he was basically performing a lot of illegal abortions, and he was killing babies after they'd already been born. So that's what he was convicted of. He was convicted of murder.
Wow. And this is like one of the biggest like underreported crime sprees, because I found out about this like maybe 2, 3 years ago. I'd never even heard of the guy. So
Yeah.
what
Yeah.
I'm, here's what I as a filmmaker, just and I apologize, like, is it, I don't know how do you make this, just like, instead of just being like sad and maudlin, is it a thriller? Are we on the side of the cops and we're trying to track this guy down, or is it like inside the mind of a, how did you
No,
tackle it? How did you go about it?
it's a thriller. It's definitely a crime drama. It's all about how they caught him and how they prosecuted him. That's basically what it is. Because I just thought that any other way of going about it would just be too maudlin and would make the movie unwatchable.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wanted the story to get out there, but I did also want it to be something that people could actually sit through without losing their lunch, you know.
Yeah, so. that's a tough one. I mean, just as a subject matter. Now, did the producers like reach out to you? Or, like, it's tough, man. I don't know. Granted, you've done a boatload of films. I just named a handful, and you've been acting for a very long time. And most talented people eventually want to direct. But like, what made you say yes to this project?
Well, when they first contacted me, you know, I was a friend of theirs, and they just said, "Do you know anybody who might be interested in directing this film?" And I gave them a couple of names, and those names didn't pan out. And they came back to me, and I said, "Well, you know, I did direct a film a few years ago. I might do it, depending on the script, you know." And I sent them a copy of the movie that I directed, and they asked me to come on board. And yeah, I mean, after I read this, I was kind of tentative about it until I read the script. And when I read the script, I thought, okay, this is a story that needs to be told, and it's one of those rare instances where you can kind of participate in something that you actually think might be important, you know?
yeah. Well, and how are, I'm sure you, have you screened this for critics and what's the feedback been?
You know, it's been screened for a lot of different groups. The feedback has been very positive. They haven't screened it for critics. I know what the critics are going to say. I mean, you know, I'm not going to pay any attention to that, but it's been very well received by the audiences that have watched it.
So. That's fantastic. Now, was there like a breakout person for you? Now, I know you have to be somewhat political because you got a big cast, you got to be nice to everybody, but is there a performance in the film that just stands out where you're like, wow, I didn't know this guy or this girl just had it in them?
I would say both in the case of Dean Cain, who delivers a really gritty, down-to-earth performance that I haven't seen him do anything like this before. And he's really terrific in it. And Sarah Jane Morris, who's basically the lead in the film, she's the lead prosecutor. She really, it's a brave, touching, wonderful performance from her. And a lot of the, I mean, almost all the, I have like six notes from different actresses in the movie who basically wrote me saying, "Thank you for giving me my first role."
So wow.
There's a lot of first-time actresses in this movie, and they all are pretty amazing. And a lot of that, of course, is due to me because I'm such a genius. But
I know you're joking around, but like that is a huge part of it. You know, you don't want an adversarial role with your cast. They got to feel comfortable. They got to feel, you kind of have to shepherd them on this journey, but you got to get what you want out of it. I'd love to direct as well someday, but it's like such a daunting task. Like, what was the biggest challenge?
Really, time. The budget and the amount of time that we had to spend. That was the biggest challenge because, you know, we shot the movie in 21 days, and really it should have been 30.
Yeah. But, that's like a Clint Eastwood schedule right there.
Yeah, it really is. It's like a TV movie schedule. But, you know, back in the 80s when they made TV movies. You
know? They should bring those back.
Yeah, they should. I guess they can't figure out how to make that profitable anymore, but... that was really the biggest challenge is, you know, you got to get so much done in a day. And, yeah. But thankfully I had a great crew. I had a great DP, Mark Peterson, who did a fantastic job. And, you know, it really came together beautifully. I mean, I'm very proud of it. It's a nice.
I cannot wait to see it. I cannot wait to see it. Now I want to get to you a little bit as an actor. Some of the directors that you've worked with, insane. Barbara Streisand, Tony Scott, Robert Zemeckis, holy smoke, Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, well, of those that you mentioned, only Barbara Streisand is actually insane. But
what was she to work like? You guys, you were the Prince of Tides. You were the
No, she's perfectly nice. I was just kidding. It was a long time ago, and I was only there for one day. But in the movie, I basically have one scene where I'm at a party, and I ask Nick Nolte to dance with me.
Yeah.
And Barbara Streisand, when I auditioned for the movie, I kind of came in like leather gear, like a lot of the other people that were auditioning for it were kind of preppy and nicely dressed. And I had on a leather cap, yeah, a tank top, and a chain and stuff. And she kind of didn't get it when I did my audition. She said, she looked at me and she said, you know, I might want to use you for one of the rapists. And I think the story goes that she showed the tapes of the auditions to Nick Nolte. And Nick Nolte said, you should get the leather guy.
So, Nolte, now was he nuts on that movie?
I had a great time with him. You know, the people that were in the scene with me were Nick Nolte and George Carlin.
Oh, so, my Lord!
Yeah, it was great. It was just
I was a what you call an extra. Came very, very close to a speaking part in this movie called Teachers with Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
And he must have been going through something back then.
Yeah,
because wow. He was pajama pants and robe, and he was out there. Old Nick was out there. You know who does a great Nick? Kevin James does the best Nick Nolte impression ever the history of ever. Yeah, okay, so, holy smoke. I saw Castaway in the movie theater, and I really did not like it at all, I just watched it again a couple weeks ago and, like, had an epiphany. Like, wow, I totally missed this movie. Like, I got it wrong. And I'm watching it, and then you show up in
right.
it. And, dude, I want to tell you what, and I tweeted about it. Like, that was a fantastic performance.
Oh, well, I appreciate that.
It's a very rare quality. I want to keep blowing smoke here just for a little bit longer. But it's like the everyman, to me, is the hardest thing for an actor to do. Like, and Robert Duvall would back me up on this. It's easy to play, oh, I'm paralyzed, I can only move my head. Oh, I'm blind, who's talking? You know, there's just like little tricks you can get away with. But dude, that was a fantastic performance in Castaway.
Well, you're very sweet. I appreciate that. It was great fun, and of course, an honor to work with Zemeckis and Hanks. And, you know, that came about, I think, partially. I had worked with Hanks a little bit on From the Earth to the Moon. He produced that, and I met
yeah.
him when I was working on that show.
Oh, I had it flipped. I thought you met Hanks on Castaway, and then you did, you were Deke Slayton, yeah?
Yeah, no, that came first. And From the Earth to the Moon was really, I was on that show for like 12 episodes, and I met everybody in Hollywood, I think. I met Hanks, and then I met Graham Yost. And then
wow.
for 15 years after I did that, I was writing Graham Yost going, I thought you liked me. I thought we were friends. What? You're doing all this stuff, and you never cast me. And then finally he told me he gave me Justified just to shut me up.
Oh, man. I haven't seen Justified. I gotta get into that. I'm a huge Timothy Oliphant fan. He was amazing. What was the series he did on HBO? Deadwood.
Yeah, he's all right.
He doesn't suck. He's got that. I can barely contain my rage thing down. I've never seen anybody do that. Just like he's just so angry, and it's just simmering. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we had a great time on that show. Most of my stuff
oh,
on
yeah.
that show, you'll see when you watch it. I mean, 90% of what I do on that show is talk to him.
So, okay.
But yeah, we had a great time.
Now, I just want to get this out there. You were also a series regular on Rodney with my old friend Rodney Carrington. And I had no idea. Oh my God. I've been in Hollywood for a while. I've been fortunate enough. I've written on a few shows, blah, 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 blah. But like before any of that happened, I had met Rodney and I'd never seen anything like it. We were working at a comedy club in Louisville, Kentucky. And he just, there was like 25 people on the first night. He was so funny. I like my women like I like my chicken, just a little bit of fat on the end. He's doing
right.
his little songs. He's just a goofball.
Right. Yeah.
He's just this oaky, goofball, lovable idiot. and just to watch the audience just grow and grow and grow until by Friday night it was just standing room only. It was hilarious. So I moved out to LA. Oh, it's completely amazing. So I moved out to Hollywood, and then I'm doing stand up at like the improv in like in Phoenix or something. And Rodney's doing like a theater. He comes out to see. He ends his show, comes over to see my show, and he's like, "Do you ever move out to LA? They keep trying to convince me to go." Now, if you don't know Rodney, that's spot on.
Yeah, it is. It is.
They keep trying to get me to come out there, and I'm like, I went to the head of ABC, and I'm like, "What do you pay John Ritter? When you want to pay me what you pay John Ritter, then I'll do the dang show." And he was completely for real, and it worked. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Yeah, we did two seasons, and you know, when I met Rodney, I just auditioned for it and met him, and we did the pilot, and we just hit it off. We were really good friends right from the beginning, and I'd never really heard of Rodney before. You know, I'd been in L.A. all this time, and I didn't know that he was such a big comedian out in the middle of the country. And after we got done, I was flying back to North Carolina, and he said, "Why don't you just come with me and you stop and stop?" I think we went to, I can't remember exactly, St. Louis. We went to St. Louis on his private jet to see his show.
Yeah.
And like, we go in and there's 5,000 people there, and they know every word to every song. And I was like, "Oh my God, who is this man?"
Exactly. See, here's the deal, Nick. You were living in a bubble, and Rodney was out there in the middle of America. He's the Donald Trump of stand-ups.
I know, and he's still killing it. I mean, I just talked to him last week. He works every weekend and goes back home, and he says, "Man, I'm done with that LA stuff. I'm not ever coming out there ever again."
He is a genius. And oddly enough, you're a fantastic golfer. Rodney taught me to golf.
Yeah.
I never golfed. And he's always complaining about his wife. I the first day I met him, I tell you what, man, my wife just spends all my money. She just spends all my money. He didn't have a car. This is before he was huge. He didn't have a car. He's like, "Can you take me to the mall? Can you take me to the mall? It's white hat season. It's white hat." And I'm like, I take him to the mall, and the guy blows $300 on a white cowboy hat. I'm like, "Yeah, your wife's the problem. Your wife is the problem."
Yeah, yeah. No, Rodney's a character for sure.
Hilarious.
And the other thing I directed was a music video for Rodney. So,
are you kidding me?
No, I did a music video for his song "If I'm the Only One," and he plays it now at all his concerts. He plays it in the pre-show.
That's fantastic, man. Now, but before I let you go, like, and this is fantastic because, and it gives me hope as a, like, I'm on Twitter, I'm doing this Loftus Party thing and trying to maintain a career in Hollywood. And I see your tweets and I'm like, okay, here's, cause dude, I always hold back. Always hold back. I'm pumping the brakes 9 times out of 10. Cause I'm like, I don't, but like, you let it rip, dude.
Yeah, you're probably smart. You probably should keep it. No, I just, you know, at a certain point, I think I just got to the point where it's like, okay, I'm not going to put up with this. I don't care. I'm going to be myself and let the chips fall where they may. And if somebody doesn't want to work with me because of my politics, then I probably wouldn't enjoy the experience anyway, so the hell with it, you know.
But has it gotten in the way ever? Have you like been on the set and someone says something and you bite your tongue? Has it ever been? Because like with me, like I was writing on the old George Lopez show, the sitcom, and I had a producer. A buddy of mine said something about Bush, like in support of Bush, and this woman was like, "I can't believe we've got Republicans on the staff." And me, and my butt got really quiet, really quick, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know what? Everybody knows what my politics are, and I don't talk politics on the set. I mean, if somebody brings it up, I just go, you know, that's not something I'm willing to discuss here. I don't think it's the proper forum, unless you'd like to talk about Jesus, too. You know, they sort of leave me alone after that. But, yeah, it's just a policy. You know, what I do on Twitter and, you know, when I speak on the radio or whatever I do, that's one thing. But I don't like the people that talk politics at work. I think it's rude. I think it's rude because there's a power imbalance there, and there's definitely people on the crew that are not going to speak up if one of the stars starts going on and on about how what a racist Trump is or how awful Republicans are. Yeah. You know, because a lot of the crew's mixed. The crew isn't 100% Democrat, but they can't, you know, that it's not fair. If they open their mouths, they'll get fired.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
So I just don't do that.
Okay, well, before I let you go, one more question. Did you ever turn down a part or lose out a part and just look back and go, man, I messed up. I wish I could have a do-over on that. Like, famously, like Tom Selleck was supposed to be Indiana Jones. James Caan turned down the lead in Kramer versus Kramer. Do you have one of those famous, like, the part that got away stories?
And no, I don't really. I think I must have accepted every part that somebody offered me.
You know, that's fantastic.
I just went, okay, how much? You know, I might have turned a few things down because I didn't think there was enough money or it was too far to travel or it conflicted with something, but I never did turn down a role just because I didn't like it, you know.
Well, hey, that's cool. I am digging it. So what's next? Are you going to go back to directing? Are you acting? What's next?
Well, I'm still acting once in a while, and I have a couple of projects that I'm developing. One's a wrestling script, and one is a script about gospel quartet music in the 60s, which, as you might imagine, is a really hot topic right now.
That's the one that's going to sell. That's the one that's going to sell, I'll tell you right now.
Right. But I do hope to direct some more. I've gotten to that age where most of the parts people offer me are kind of boring. They're the same things that I've already done. And it's like, you know, the old guys don't get to do that much unless you're Robert Duvall.
Well, so, dude, you are killing it. You're crushing it. Don't change anything. A fine, fine actor, a great director. Everybody, you need to go out and see Gosnell on October 12th.
Absolutely. So, that first weekend is key. Everybody go on opening day.
Yeah, you gotta make that algorithm happen. Let's beat the machine. Right. Nick, thank you so much for being on the show, dude. Have a good one. I'll let you get back to golf. I'd love to talk to you in the future, brother, if you're ever around.
Nice talking to you, Michael.
Good talking to you, buddy. Take care.
All right.
That is what I'm talking about. That's big time Hollywood guests. That's big Hollywood right there. I love it. I love it. Thank you, Nick Searcy. What a cool dude. What an absolutely great dude. Look at us go. Like, we got the Nick Searcy on here. We got the Kurt Schlichter. We've had the Charlie Sheen. We've had the oh my gosh, I can't remember her name.
Derek Hunter.
Derek Hunter. Mm-hmm. Yep, but I'm talking Hollywood.
Oh, sorry.
That girl from King of Queens, that Leah Remini girl.
Definitely a Remini girl.
We had her. She's mm-hmm. hilarious. I was watching a little bit of her reality show.
J-Lo, didn't
it was
she?
On the other night. Well, I wanted her to say hello to J-Lo for me.
Right.
Which she didn't do. She claimed that she told me she did. And then she told me that J-Lo cursed me out a little bit. Said like F you something. And I was delighted. I was delighted
just
by that.
Just that she talked to you.
Yes.
About you.
About me. Knows awesome. That I exist. However, none of it happened.
Still
none
waiting
happened.
For Taylor Swift, though.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that... I don't want to get into that. Hey! This is just a random... Just a completely random thought, but I just want to make sure I say it. I saw this... I'm going through the Twitter the other day, mm-hmm. and I see, like, some women's study professor in somewhere... said some, I don't even know what the article was about. I couldn't get by her hair. And like, what is up with all the women's study professors and their hair? Like, how can not, there's gotta be a hot women's studies professor somewhere.
Oh, there's a couple. They're just not okay with feminists. So, Claire Lehman is a very pretty lady. Deborah Lowe, I think She's a sex researcher. She's a very pretty woman.
Well, that's different.
They're not okay with the radical third wave feminists because they say things like men aren't toxic, men and women are different, and things like that.
I just wonder if, like, there's got to be, like, a commonality here, like, and I'm using gross stereotypes. I really am.
Angry women. Like, they're very angry.
But, like, even if you're, like, an angry, like, and I'm not saying they're all lesbians, but, like, if you're an angry, like, butch lesbian, you get that official, you know, butch, hardcore, you know, dyke haircut, you know? Mm-hmm. And this, it's not even that. This is more like an asexual, like it's Pat from Saturday Night Live. And I find it odd. And I'd like to.
You don't really want to understand it. If you want to understand it, you have to go look in an account called Hands Across the Aisle, which is where lesbians and women are actually being kicked out of the feminist movement and the LGBTQ movement. So now it'll just be GBTQ, maybe. I don't know.
And then sometimes because, P, they're trying to add the P to it now.
What's the P?
Pedophilia.
Oh, no, 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 no. No!
I'm telling you. Well, they're not. They're not calling it pedophilia, but it's pedo something. It's
whatever. It's wrong. And if they add that, then I have to oppose them on everything. But these women are being kicked out of the movement essentially because they say trans women are still men, and there are women's spaces that they shouldn't be in because it's dangerous, like violent shelters and things like that, especially when you go down to younger ages. And I mean, these women get death threats, I mean, because they say that's not really a woman.
Well, I'm going to let them fight. I want Oprah to come back and tour the nation and do makeovers on all the women, women's studies professors. It's going to be dicey, you know, because you need to figure out what you want to look like at the end.
I think Stacey London and her partner there, they used to do What Not to Wear on TLC.
Oh, yeah.
I think they would do a better job.
They would do a much better job. They would do a much better job.
I loved her gray streak. I thought that was so cool. I was thinking about doing it myself.
You could totally rock that.
I'm thinking about it.
It'd be better on you than it would on Stacey London. I got the same. It's in the same area as Omarosa. Stacey London is worried about one person. Stacey London. It's just she's not. You got to be a bit of a giver. You got to be a bit of. And I don't get that sense from her. Okay.
Well, I mean, I loved her partner Clinton. I just thought he was wonderful.
That dude was all right. Give him his own show. Mm-hmm. Just give him his own show. Okay, so I thought this was hysterical. It's not really pop culture, but it's like terrifying and pop culture adjacent. I guess it's already like this in Scotland. And England is getting ready to make this change, where you're born automatically being an organ donor. Everyone is going to automatically be an organ donor unless you opt out. Do you remember Do you remember the Monty Python skit where it's the couple at home just like hanging out, and then John Cleese and this other guy dressed up as doctors come and like, we're here for your liver, and the guy's like, I'm using it.
That's gross.
Oh, it's hilarious. These two doctors just come into the house and they're like, we are here for your liver, and the guy's like, I'm using it. I can't give it up now. No. It says clearly you're an organ donor. We need your liver. And they like literally hold the guy down in the kitchen and they rip his. That's coming soon to a country near you.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, automatically
an
organ donor.
As a former medical professional, I'm disgusted by a lot of what the NHS does, and some of the things that have been found they have done that are just disgusting, which is kind of like organ donation with no permission. But to like that's just wrong.
It's complete.
I mean, consent is everything. In the medical profession.
I can't wait for the first mistake. Like, already, there's so many mistakes made in hospitals left and right. Like, they tell you, take a Sharpie. Like, if you're going to have an operation done on your left foot,
take you know, this leg. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right on, with, on your foot with a Sharpie. This is the one, not the other one. So right. I just can't wait till some dude. It will be a dramatic reenactment of the Monty Python skit. We're here for your liver. Okay. And other, I think, funny pop culture Hollywood news. Some street artist, I don't know if it was Sabo, and I don't know if it was a friend of ours who did this, but somebody put up a boatload of fake Donald Trump stars on the Walk of Fame.
Oh, that friend of ours?
And
that would
I
be
was
awesome.
Delighted.
If that friend of ours did it, that would be awesome.
It sounds...
Because Sabo usually takes credit.
I don't think... Sabo takes a lot of credit.
That's what I'm saying. But he takes credit for most of the ones that, like, hit the media. That hit the media and silence. I'm kind of thinking it might be our friend. We could ask him. We won't tell
you know
anybody.
What? I'll shoot him an email and find out. But it was a great idea. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that I want to continue. I want that to just keep going. Like, spontaneously, you'll wake up and there'll be 30. And here's the cool thing about it. And this is the difference in my between conservatives and liberals. What they did, they put it on an empty portion. They didn't right. cover any existing stars, which I thought was a very, very, very cool move.
No, I think they could have covered Bill Cosby's, Roman Polanski's, and, you know, those guys, and I would have been okay with it. Because how big a hypocrite are you people? You don't like the president, so you take his off. He paid for it, if I understand correctly.
Yeah.
And you leave the stars of these absolute scale bags? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And the only reason, I don't know why, maybe the city of Los Angeles was providing security. I'm trying to find some, like, legit reason. At first, I thought the city, I guess it's technically the city of Hollywood. Like, right. like the city of Hollywood, like, listen, we can't afford to shell out $30,000 or whatever it is every time somebody defaces this thing. We just can't afford to do that. But I guess Trump was paying for it. Trump was like, whenever they mess it up, I'll pay for the new one. Maybe so. They better come up with a real legit reason really soon. But I want the street artist to continue. Just keep putting up the fake ones.
The proposal or whatever you call it. In the city council that I read was just, we don't like him. He's a terrible president. He, you know, keeps families at the border. I mean, it was all the stuff that the left screams about. Never mind that half the children under five that were there with criminals and human traffickers. That's why we separate them and make sure everybody's with who they're supposed to be with. But all that stuff in the petition, it really had nothing to do with cost. It had nothing to do with repairs. It was just like, we don't like him. He's not a good person. Well, let's go down that little walk of fame and take off all the stars of people who are not good people.
Yeah, it's the kangaroo court of public opinion, and it's not even public opinion. It's like it's the court of the elite who, like, oh, we'll decide. And that's the problem altogether. It's a great metaphor. It's a great metaphor. A handful of bogus, I don't even know if they're elected officials or if it's just like, who sits on that council that gives away the Hollywood Walk of Fame stars? Mm-hmm. They just decide, we're going to unperson you, we don't like you, because we don't like this person, regardless of the track record, regardless of the facts. And that is... really a scary thing.
Here's what they don't understand. What do you do to Trump when you make stupid decisions like that? What do you do to Alex Jones when you make stupid decisions like that? What do you do with Gavin McInnes, who, again, I don't really understand what they were trying to associate him with? You just made them all martyrs.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. The day Alex Jones was taken off of iTunes, so his podcasts were no longer available on the platform itself, but his app was still available in the store, and I think Apple has maintained that, it was the fourth most downloaded app that day.
Yeah.
People were just going like, okay, what is this? And maybe I need to go look. Like, you literally just increased his audience. You didn't decrease it.
And it's almost, and like they'll forget that people still talk. Like the way I heard of Alex Jones, the first time ever, a buddy of mine told me about it. He goes, "Oh man, I'm listening to this dude, Alex Jones. You got to check it out because this, that, and the other thing." And I'm like, "What? What is this?" And then he played me a little bit, and I'm like, "Okay, that's okay. That's not my jam.
I got it from the shirtless pictures and the gay frog gifs, and then I had to say, "Well, who is this?" And then I found out.
Well, it is. That is the unintended consequence when you start just beating up on somebody, you make them more popular.
Then you look at Vox's article the next day. So CNN went 100% activist. Then Oliver Darcy decides to comb through InfoWars Twitter feed and find all the things that potentially violated terms of service and make Twitter make InfoWars delete them. I mean, if that's not activism journalism, I don't know what is. And then Vox puts out something that now we're supposed to take Steven Crowder, Lauren Southern. I mean, there was a list of like 10 who are not conspiracy theorists. A lot of these people go out and do video journalism of what's actually going on.
So yeah, it's
really
just telling us
you don't want us to know what's actually going on.
And that was the other thing, like when they got rid of, Alex Jones and Gavin, everybody's going, "Well, that's where it's going to stop. That's where it's going to end."
It's not like
they're going to ask Fox News to be shut down. And already there's a petition with thousands of signatures to get Fox News.
Yeah, like, I know.
It's not a slippery slope. It's one of those, like, slippery water slides.
Yeah.
One of those Schlittenheimer, the big one.
Super slippery mats on a super slippery slide with a big gush of water.
This is hilarious. Some dude wrote an op-ed, I think, in the New York Times, calling for all the media to gang up on Trump. He's like,
"What?
The media? Yeah, the media. We have a responsibility to gang up on Trump. We should all get together, and we should all make fun of the things he says, and we should all make fun of the tweets, and we should all make people be." I'm like, "Dude, are you new?
Have you been asleep?"
that's all they've been doing.
No, it's my like, favorite article.
I'm asking McDonald's. I hereby ask McDonald's to come up with their own sandwich, a bigger sandwich with two all beef patties. It's like, yeah, dude, that's the Big Mac.
We got that.
We're good to go.
My favorite article of the week, and this goes to culture, is this woman writes this big article in The Atlantic about these videos her son was watching in late high school, and then he went away to college, and then she figured out and started watching Jordan Peterson and Ben Shapiro and Eric Weinstein and all these other intellectual dark, and said, "Oh my God, this was the first argument against identity politics they have ever heard, and they love it." So she basically writes this whole article about how Jordan Peterson, in that perspective, snuck up on the left because it wasn't in their usual channels, and he's actually beating them. He's actually beating them.
Oh, yeah.
At their own game. And it's delicious. I love it.
Oh, it's the best. A buddy of mine sent me that article a couple days ago, and I read it, and it's fantastic.
Isn't
and that's
it?
Like, people forget that people talk.
Yep.
And when there is a great idea, or where there is some, you know, shard of knowledge just sitting on the beach, and somebody finds it, and they go, "Oh my gosh, there's shards of knowledge on this beach. What?" And then their friends go down, and they go, "Oh my, I found a shard of knowledge on the beach." And then they tell their friends, and yeah, you can. That's the good thing. That gives me hope and faith and all that stuff.
Yep.
I want to get to this before we run out of time. I finally watched Deadpool 2.
Was I right about the final scene?
Well, it's spoiler city now. We're gonna rip it right open. It's out on digital video. You can stream it. You can rent it. Whatever. What was your big thing? Was the end credit scene?
The end credit scene where he kills himself because he was in that movie that you said was the dumbest thing he ever did.
Oh, well, that's the second time he's made fun of himself for being Green Lantern.
Yeah.
But that was kind of funny when he did that. Although, it's a bummer. A friend of mine is good buddies with Ryan Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say this, is listed as a producer on both movies. And I'm just talking out of school here. Here we go. I'm just talking out of school. The first movie was so good. I expected nothing. Saw Deadpool and just hilarious. I call my buddy. I congratulate him. And I'm like, are you working on that sequel? Get that sequel going. He told me there was problems with the script, but Ryan was going to go in and some other, they were going to fix it. And, you know, Ryan loves Deadpool. Deadpool 2, I mean, it kind of does. It suffered from, there was a lot of laugh out loud moments. Yes. I laughed out loud a lot. However, it could have been so much better.
I left pretty happy. Like when he had his little group of superheroes and they kept dying all except for that one girl, I was cracking up.
That was hilarious.
That was hilarious.
That was hilarious. However, his relationship with that, with his, you know, it's horrible. I don't know the actress's name, but that was the whole first movie.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted a guy that he wanted to turn himself back into the old Ryan Reynolds so he wasn't ugly, so he could get his girl back because that's his true love, and, you know, he's a hopeless romantic. When you kill her in the very beginning, and he didn't, it's weird because he still wanted to crack wise. I don't think they did that moment right at all. And then it became problematic from a writing point of view. I'm like, I don't know what Deadpool wants. Like, does he want to commit suicide and go and be with her in heaven? Does he want to die and be with her, but, oh, he can't be with her? Oh, now he wants to save this kid? Oh, he needs to save the kid so he can do this? And then Josh Brolin shows up, and Ryan and Deadpool's like, well, where are you from? And the guy's like, I'm from the future. I got a wristwatch here, and I got one trip left. If I'm Deadpool, I'm chopping that thing off his hand. I'm chopping it off his hand, and I'm going to go save my wife. Like, for them to like leave that, just like, what? So whenever you're sitting, and this is for all the writers out there, because I know we have a lot of writers that listen to the show. whenever you're sitting there, ask it, what does my character want? What, and they just muddied it up. It had plenty of jokes. It had plenty of jokes and laugh out loud moments.
I'm just so much less critical than you that I just enjoyed it. Like, I don't think like a writer.
So easy.
I don't think like a writer.
It would have been so easy to fix. You would have loved it more. Right now, you walk out of Deadpool 2 and you're like, that was money well spent. I enjoyed myself.
Uh-huh.
You could have left that movie theater going, holy cow. And that's, to me, that's what you get from the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, but now we'll see what happens without Tim Gunn. I feel bad for everyone involved. That's a lose-lose-lose scenario. Listen, I want to thank Nick Searcy for being on the show. Next week, I want to talk – remind me to talk about Murphy Brown coming back. And remind me to talk about The Punisher. I'm watching The Punisher. I got 4 episodes left. That guy's a great actor.
Binge-washing Gotham. I'm way behind, but I can't put that one down.
Oof, don't get me started on Gotham. Okay, so lots going on. The next few weeks, you guys, keep a good thought in your head. The next few weeks are extremely, extremely important weeks. Powerful forces are at work. I'm going to be doing some stand-up. Wednesday night, I'm going to be at the Irvine Improv. I'll be headlining some shows out there. I guess they have a wonderful new comedy club. It's huge. It's ginormous. And I would love to just fill that sucker up with fans of the Loftus Party. So thanks for liking the videos. Leave a review on iTunes for the podcast. Come out and see me at the Irvine Improv on Wednesday. Thanks, Nick Searcy. Go to the website, go to theloftusparty.com. Get yourself a little something. Wear your colors with pride. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.